John did not know what to say. It wasn't your fault, he managed, after an awkward silence. Welcome to the White Wolf Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Chimps and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitewolfpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinners.
Was it awkward?
Oh, it was awkward.
It was definitely awkward. Someone's fault. But it might not have been his, if you know what I'm saying.
I don't think the guilty party's name is John.
That's definitely true. Oh, boy.
Oh, well. Welcome back. The first post-Gen Con episode of The White Book. How exciting is that? Well, I mean, I think it's pretty exciting for me. We are borderline close at the moment to returning to the old Two Champs and a Chump status. since, of course, I'm here. Will, same as usual, does pretty okay in Melee and less so in Joust. Usual these days, I should say. I used to turn in better Joust performances in, say, first edition. But oh well. So joining me this week is frequent guest host, borderline co-host, Alex Black, who I have to congratulate on being our new North American Joust championship, or champion, not championship. And
yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on and always being ready to jump on at a moment's notice, pretty much. Though, actually, I think I gave you a little more notice than usual. This was like 2 days or so, so I feel like that's pretty good.
Yeah, I didn't know what to do with all that excess time.
Prepare even harder than you normally do. And then, of course, our North American Joust King of Swiss, undefeated on Saturday, Kyle Vansel.
Woohoo. It sounds good. King of Swiss sounds so good, but it hurts so bad.
Try to be just a touch more excited.
I will admit, I sat around. One of the thoughts that did cross my head Saturday night was how fun White Book would be this week. Little did I know the meat and potatoes for topics still to come. I figured it'd be a gloat session. And it will not be that.
Well, it may not be from you. Alex might still gloat. I don't know.
Oh, sure. Of course.
He seems like too nice of a guy for it, but who knows till we get him talking.
Best of the continents, quite an accomplishment.
So I guess where do we begin?
Well, I think first, just so the listeners know, we're gonna focus here on the positive stuff. I know many listeners are waiting for us to hear discussion on the Sunday morning events, which we'll get to. But first, I want to talk a little bit with Kyle and Alex about the good stuff, about their actual tournament performance and the decks they took and that sort of thing. So that normally when we discuss this type of stuff on the show, kind of do our tourney recaps, we start with the person who did the worst that day. So I'm going to go ahead and throw a little bit about my tournament, my Joust tournament out there, and quickly move on to you guys. So, you know, I don't feel like locally I had been pushing myself as hard for competitive play as I probably should have been pre-Gen Con. You know, we've been spending a lot of time and effort lately in trying to expand the meta with demo days and different stuff. And more casual things. So I think I was a little underprepared. Wound up tweaking the deck I was having the most fun with at the time. So I played a Tyrell Lion heavy reset Marjorie deck effectively. I figured if I hit some builders and nice watch of all kinds, I could probably just keep clearing the board enough times that some of my fat characters could stay there and do the work, power out with some renown. You know, I opened my very first game after my mulligan with the option to set up either Jaime Lannister or Marjorie Tyrell with a duplicate and nothing else. So I hemmed and hawed quite a bit, debated, and then took the view that setting up Marjorie and the duplicate and gambling on the march was the better option. It was going to suck for me either way, I decided. But at least if they didn't have the march available, then starting with the double or with the duped march was going to be the best start I could have. They had the marched, of course. So against Greyjoy Crossing, I thought the game was all but over right then and there. But amazingly, I managed to claw back and try to keep clearing the board and chewing through his hand, and managed to keep him from, I believe, ever getting his third challenge in any phase. And so then, plot six, we were sitting at 14-14. Unfortunately, I couldn't find a way to close out that last power, and his very last plot was Valor, and he had a save, and I did not. So, he took the victory there, and that was, by far, my best and most enjoyable game of the day. The others were fair to middling in my performance, so I'm not going to really heavily talk about them, but suffice it to say, I went 1-2, and upon being told that mathematically eliminated me from making it through the graduated cut, I decided it was time for other events at Gen Con. So that was my day.
Do you think that it's, I mean, obviously it's a grim scenario where you're left to decide between setting up one 6-cost character or the other. Do you think it's possible that setting up the march without the dupe would have been better for you in the event that they had the march anyway?
You know, that's actually a good question. And Kyle brought that up later, I think. Didn't you say Rings had told you that was the pro play?
Yeah, someone yelled at me playtesting the night before because I did essentially the same thing you did. I'm like, no, the hedged bet is play the one, because if they don't have it, then you just drop the. Not losing both marges is a better reward than just an additional card deeper in your deck.
Yeah,
yeah, and I can definitely see that argument. I think I was already so down looking at my hand, thinking that. The game was likely to be over just on plots. Sure. That I didn't think enough about that extra possibility there. And you know, with the capability to replay a marge after that, actually I did later after I drew into the third copy ever. But anyway, to replay her in that marshalling may have really just let me close that out. So that is definitely something to keep in mind in the future.
Yeah, it's certainly something that can happen with those decks with the really high cost curve. You know, all the characters are such high impact, but there are just going to be those percentage of games where you mulligan into a single large character, and there's just not a whole lot to do other than, I guess, what I've seen somewhat with plot lines these days in those kind of decks, where they're starting to trend towards playing as much econ as possible in the plot line. The DC deck, they were on Lanny Rains, and they were playing double Late Summer Feast and Calling the Banners. And, you know, it's like, with all the resets in the format right now, it seems like that could be the right way to go for the, like, big cost curve character decks. I know, Kyle, you played Lanny Rains, right?
Correct.
So what was, I guess we could transition over to you. What was your plot line like? Did you feel like that, like, playing a lot of high econ plots was really necessary in this heavy reset meta?
I didn't. I ran, the +2 off your opponent's plot. I'm so bad with names tonight. And trading. And those are my two econ plots. Rather than that, I try to focus on effects off of my plots. I ran a lot of econ locations to counteract that. But since first ed, I've been a huge believer in, I like plots that do things.
Oh, I could totally agree with you. But yeah, all the same, the trading plus Summer Harvest is still pretty decent as far as economy goes. But it's that sucks, Will, that your tournament experience had to start off like that. It's never a good feeling in round one.
I had a very good feeling the day before that. We won't delve into Melee. That's for another episode, I think. But I still felt good about my Thrones weekend.
Right on.
To counteract that, I think my first round was my best round of the day. Nice. The next six are unmentionable, but the first one's good. I was playing a nice guy, rather new to the game, playing builders. I mean, just straight up hardcore builders, doing the summer stuff. And I get to a point where I've got a Cersei out, some cheap military icon, and I think a Tyrion. I don't know. Point is, he's got a bunch of his dudes, but he's low on entry icons. And so I swing big on this intrigue, win it, flip into wildfire, flip into trial by combat, and then a queen's assassin to wipe his board off of one challenge. And I particularly really hate the builder's deck a lot, so that felt really good to be like, hey, I know you have a lot of weenies, but I'm going to make them all go away.
Not anymore.
So you were playing the, like, aggressive sort of the aggro reigns version with trial.
Oh yeah, and I made a bunch of tweaks.
Yeah, I was curious how similar it was to the deck you played at first player, because I know you hadn't had a lot of time to play lately.
Yeah, so I really like the version I took to first player, which is inspired heavily by. There's some deck that I think it won an Italian tournament, and then like a variant of it went to an Irish tournament whose list didn't include Valor, so I had to hate it off of moral obligation. but so I took the Italian deck, tweaked a couple cards, and that's what I took to Missouri, and I liked not only the success I had, but it felt very comfortable. And I think, especially at going into tournaments that are big like this, that comfort is key in the later rounds. So I took it, and I talked to a bunch of people who I knew weren't coming to Gen Con and tweaked some things, asked for their feedback. Glazer being one of them, just because I'm like, I need people that are like a little more tapped into the meta than I am at the moment. And we made some tweaks. I stuck in Red Wedding as one of my scheme plots, and I added in Confiscation, which turned out to be a great play with all the Martell around, which I did not expect. Worked in some tiers of lists, some other kill events, and just some tweaks. So it's, I'd probably say two plots and within six cards of what I took to first player. But it's really well-rounded. Doesn't have any, like, big tricks in it. The event package is, the cancel suite. I think twos and threes, depending on which one. And then trial by combat and tears for your control. And nightmares for some control.
Sure.
And then just good laney dudes. I have one Jack in there, who was really money, actually, in Swiss. I mean, just when you can get him to go off. Yeah. Especially against, like, Greyjoy and being able to schemes into Power Behind the Throne to, like, tap him twice in a single phase. I mean, that's just brutal.
Yeah.
To go Intrigue Pow, flips games by himself. So, I mean, him being seven blows, but even if you only get that one turn out of him, I think it's super worth it. And that's not a hard thing to imagine, being able to hit him for an intrigue and then scan him and hit him into a power. Especially if you open with military and go second. Like, it's not so bad. Which is usually when you want to use them, because you want them to flop out all their uniques and then pick and choose who's going to die.
Right.
So I felt really good about his play. And the Queen's Assassins. I know that card is super situational, but it did the Lord's work all day.
It's really strong in that trial by combat variant, where you're just sort of pushing, the edges of their board state.
And there's a lot of times where, like, I would faint, like, I would play a hound one round and then bounce him back and then sit on the four gold. So they go, okay, that's for the hound. And then you drop that in and it's just such a hit. You just don't see it coming. So, I mean, I think I killed, I don't know, in my last round for the last game, I took a dupe off of Cersei, which allowed me to military her to knock her out against Chad, and then he scooped. And I remember taking out two or three other big characters during the day that helped save some games. Like, so, I mean, that was one of those, like, personal champ moments where I'm like, I'm rooting for you, even though I know you probably shouldn't be in this deck, but I know some of that's random, but it outperformed for sure.
Yeah, I was going to ask specifically about some of your matchups, but I'm actually looking here at the Jousting Pavilion as the SoCal or Bay Area guys start to enter it in. It looks like you did play a couple Martell variants throughout the day on day one, which obviously you beat. I was just curious sort of how those matchups went for you. Did you feel like Valor was a liability in any of them, since they were also running a lot of resets? You played the AJ, who got second place overall, and then you also played my teammate, Kevin, who was playing the same deck that I was. I just was curious sort of how those games went for you.
And both of them, I mean, I know in at least one, if not both, I saw Cersei, who does, and I run the four cost claim razor one, and she is just so good if you can get her early and just pound away at those kind of decks and just take two. And I believe my game against Kevin, he got really behind on characters and it kind of just became a race. He did some try to stall out and he got to 12 power. I mean, it was close with, like, no dudes on the board. And right. He got real close. And I think I was able to, if I remember right, I was able to get out I run a lot of saves. So I run bodyguards and run the risk, running the triplicate on a lot of the big guys, Tywin, Tyrion, Jaime, to counteract that, and then a bunch of jumper dudes. So that's my stomachable solution to Valor and multiple resets.
Okay.
And so I think I was able to just always keep a bodyguard on at least Jaime and was just able to stay, like, two power ahead of him through the game. But it was tight. That was probably the most scared I have been in a game in a long time. Just something about Martell with no characters on the board. This is terrifying. Like, I have nothing to interact with. My whole deck and game plan revolves around interacting with your board. And you're just going to passively chip away at me and I'm going to panic.
Sure.
You're, like, starting to think of, like, what BS events have I forgotten about that, oh, if you do a military challenge first and you wink and it's for 10 strength and blow up your board or some stupid corner case that's going to somehow F you because you forgot about it. That was a very stressful game. And I think I commented on that several times.
Sure. And then obviously Sunday's events took place and you had to be pretty frazzled going into that game.
Do we want to tell that story now?
We could save it.
Tilted is a word. I go into a zone when I play. It's why I don't write tournament reports, because if I don't get up from the table and instantly tell a story, which is why those two games, I'm glad you mentioned, were like the two I remember, because I remember instantly getting up, and I don't remember the game. I remember telling Will or telling Roy or telling someone about it. It's like, sure. I just go somewhere, and when I stand up, it all goes away.
Yeah.
So I feel bad because I like can't. So I go to a place when I play, and I was not there. And that really nice dude whose name I've forgotten, who recorded all those games Saturday and Sunday, has footage of it, and it's going to be super embarrassing and confusing when Sunday stuff shows up, because I am bizarre things. Leaving 3 gold to jump in a hound, flipping plots that don't make sense. It was brutal.
We'll go into that in a bit, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So.
Well, on the flip side then, before we get into that side of things, you know, we know how things turned out for you in the end, Alex, but how did the earlier rounds go? You know, how did day one go? I gather you were playing a deck that quite a few people were playing, so...
So we played Martell Stag, which we've named Cancer Lancer.
I love the name.
We thought it was kind of catchy, but so I guess I'd like to start before the tournament, just by saying, you know, the deck was one we worked on for a really long time, but I wasn't necessarily 100% on the deck even the day before the tournament. It was one of those things where I wasn't sure how much Greyjoy to expect. I kept sort of teetering back and forth between that and Targ. I had a lot of experience with Targ during the regional season. And while I had a lot of games in with Martell Stag, I didn't know if it was, you know, if it was too out of the box to bring to a tournament like Gen Con. But I think on Wednesday or Thursday, I played about 8 games with it, and I didn't drop a single game. And it was then that I just decided to go for it, and I was able to convince the rest of my team, plus a few other people, that it was a good idea. So I think ultimately 8 people ended up playing it. It was myself, my metamate from Seattle, Zach Dakota, and then 2 Canadians who are Kevin Austin, who I test with a lot, and then his friend John Neal, who I had just met but was staying in our hotel room, so we decided to get him in on it as well. And then the Thompsons had some experience with the deck back from when we played it at Thrones War, a much older variant, and they weren't really feeling any great about any deck choices leading up to Gen Con, which I think was a pretty common theme amongst players that I was talking to. A lot of people didn't seem to be super excited about any decks, including the DC guys. I talked with Seth a little bit, and it didn't seem like they were very inspired going into Gen Con either. The Thompsons played it, and then I think Nate Tarantelli, I can't remember how to pronounce your name, Nate. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He also played it. And then my buddy Aaron from BC also played the deck. So yeah, we had 8 people play the deck in total. And wow, I mean, it performed better than I could have expected. I think we went something like 37-16 on the tournament.
That's pretty solid.
But yeah, so my
quick question. I'm just curious about your testing there on Wednesday, Thursday. Was that just further testing with metamates that were in attendance, or did you search anybody out to get a little bit of a different viewpoint on things?
So I played a couple games against John on Wednesday night. I got in really late. I got in like 1:30 in the morning Wednesday night, and John was still up and he wanted to play a couple games. So we played a couple games against Tyrell Reigns, and it just crushed Tyrell Reigns. They just their game plan was kind of too all over the place, and they didn't have a lot of ways to interact. So we liked that matchup. We knew we liked that matchup. And to be fair, I knew that it was pretty well favored against the field outside of Barrett and Greyjoy, but Greyjoy had kind of been on the rise. And I wish I could say that I was more confident in it going into Wednesday night or going into even Friday. But yeah, no, mostly just people who I ended up convincing to play the deck. My buddy Aaron, we played a handful of games. Chris, we played some games. And it was just doing really well. We even tried a couple games out against Greyjoy, and I was able to find ways to win those games as well. So we were basically just crafting a game plan to get around some of the problematic cards like Political Disaster, We Do Not Sow, stuff like that, opponents' Iron Thrones. So yeah, once we felt good about the list, it wasn't really hard to convince a lot of people to play it. You know, and I do think part of that was because most people were just in this weird place where they didn't feel really great about any of their own deck choices coming into that point. And we had so much data with the deck that we knew the list was really well refined. That yeah, it just basically once I was able to get the confidence to say we should play this, it wasn't difficult to get everybody else on board. So that was kind of the lead up to the tournament. I didn't play in the Melee, which I kind of regretted, and we can talk, you know, I probably won't be on next week, but yeah, I'll say that I do regret not playing in the Melee, but I just didn't know if I wanted to expend the energy at the time. But then Saturday, you know, things obviously went really well. I played against Tyrell Wolf in round one, but it wasn't really a rushy deck. It was kind of a slower, like aggro deck with Roos. That game, it was pretty short once I Valored the Roos away and was able to sort of lock down the board state. And I do go over a lot of this in my tournament report on ThronesDB. And then round two, I played against, what did I play against in round two? I played against Guillaume from France, which was really interesting matchup. I actually played a lot of Stark in the regional season. LaPlante had gotten me onto sort of a defensive Stark deck with Maesters and Maester tech and stuff. And so as soon as Guillaume here to served for Maester Lewin on turn one, I knew that he was very likely playing some variant of that, which he was. And the game was really close. He got a Frozen Solid on my Iron Throne pretty early, but once I was able to Varus Valor the board away, which happened a lot, by the way, over the weekend, Varus into Valor is just a very potent combination of resets to make sure that, you know, the board stays completely clear in most scenarios. And yeah, once I was able to get rid of the Frozen Solid with the Crescent, the game kind of slipped away from him. And then round three, I played Tom Malucci, which I really didn't want to play. He was playing a variant of Targ that was basically the Nationals list that some of the Seattle players and I played, with like some changes from the new packs. Super close game. I kind of underestimated his ability to rush me down and lost like a close game on like turn six or seven without having seen Varus. And then round four was probably the best game of the tournament, or the most intense. I played Seth Lowe that round, the DC deck. They were playing Lanny Reigns. Fortunately, Zach had just lost to Seth the round before. Well, not fortunately, but at least, you know, if there's one positive, it's that I knew basically, you know, everything there was to know about Seth's list, including all seven of his plots. I knew he had no March, no Valor, which was kind of a bummer for us because we tend to capitalize on our opponents having resets in their deck and sort of leverage them against them on like turn six and seven. But yeah, basically Seth took a really interesting line where he was only making intrigue challenges, as to not trigger my Viper's Eyes. Basically to preserve his treacheries so that he could treachery the Varus when and if the Varus came into play, which was a really good line. And he would also win Dom every turn with his massive Lanny characters. And so basically he just gained two power a turn for the first four or five turns. there wasn't a whole lot I could do about it. I wasn't going to commit Avaris to the board before I, you know, had the opportunity to know the coast was clear, or until I had run out of time, basically, or was going to. But at one point in the game, he had Cersei and Tywin in play, and he made the intrigue challenge with Cersei, and I gassed into the Cersei. And he thought for a bit, and then he treacheried it, which I thought was kind of odd, because I think he knew I had duel. And so, you know, if he just lets the Ghastly Grey resolve, Cersei goes to hand, I can't duel him, and he still has treachery, right? So he does that, and then he continues to make his first military and power challenge of the game, basically letting me hit his Viper's Eyes and see that the coast was clear for the Varys and the duel. So I duel Varys Valard on the next two turns to wipe the board. And I was still down 8-0 at that point. And at that point, I was able to, you know, play the deck's namesake, Vanguard Lancer with Orphan of the Greenblood to back it up. And it's a pretty simple sort of combination of cards, right? You play the Lancer, you play the Orphan, bestow it, replay the Lancer a couple times, and you play a second Orphan to buy back the first one, and you can kind of loop them with as much money as you have to drain your opponent out. And just between that and Chamber, it became really difficult for him to stay ahead. And ultimately, on the we went to time, but ultimately on the final turn of the game, he was left in a scenario where he had Wildling Scout, Hound, and Jamie standing, and I had Boneway on 5 counters, and I think I was only down a couple power. But basically, he couldn't block a challenge without putting and win without putting a counter on the Boneway, and I was able to last the Giants in a Jacken and sort of set up the scenario where if he blocked with both of his intrigue characters, I'd trigger the Boneway, win Dom, and basically swing 5 power in my way on the last turn of the game. And if he didn't block, I'd kill the Hound, and he'd lose dominance, and basically the same scenario would happen. So that was a really, really close game, probably the most intense game of the tournament for me. And then, yeah, round 5 was my opponent was playing Martell Crossing. He mulliganed into a bad hand. It wasn't really a close game after that. And let's see. Then in the cut, I played Builders in round 1, another really close game where I would have lost easily if not for Orphan and Lancer. And then I played Tom Malucci again in the top 8. And I just kind of had the nuts in that game. I opened with Chamber and Throne, and I think I found Boneway with Building Orders and had early Varuses, so it wasn't really close. And then the semifinals, I played against another Lanny Reigns player who also took a similar line as Seth, just making intrigue challenges. But at that point, I was able to just sort of slowly drain him with Orphan and Lancer until I found Edric and Varys and a couple other things, and slowly just eke the game out. And and then there was the final against the Martell Fealty player, which I have to say I was a little sad. Chris Thompson, my teammate who also played the deck, was lost in the semifinals. I thought it would have been really awesome if we could have both made it to the finals.
That would have been quite the mirror. How long do you think that would have lasted?
Well, we were allotted 2 hours, and I'm pretty sure we would have taken up all of it. So
wait, there's a time limit on
the finals? There's not supposed to be, but basically they were going to get kicked out of the hall at a certain time, and so we were told we had 2 hours. So that's a whole other thing. I was a little sad that Chris didn't make it to the finals. He had an awesome run with the deck as well, and super proud of him for doing that well. The final was Martell Fealty. It was a super grindy game. It's going to be up on Rob St. John's channel at some point, and so I definitely encourage people to go check it out. But it was a really interesting game where my opponent had Iron Throne and Pyromancer, and I had to kind of dance around his Pyromancer, and he had to dance around mine. But ultimately, I was able to secure that win as well. So, yeah, it was a crazy tournament, and I made a lot of mistakes, and I got lucky in a lot of instances. You know, I just think it's worth noting that, you know, any win, you know, comes with a lot of luck and a lot of, you know, a lot of mistakes. Like, you're never going to play perfect, but fortunately, things were able to fall my way. And yeah, it was awesome. Like, I can't, you know, I know that, like, it's been overshadowed by some of this negative FFGOP stuff, which, you know, I'm in the same boat with everyone else. I hate that happened, but well, obviously I have to be happy.
Talk about that in a moment, but I don't want that to completely overshadow your victory. You know, like, it was well done. You're obviously a great player, very prepared, and you know, studying the meta and the field and what's going on. So I don't want other controversies to take away from what was a very clean win on your part. So
I do appreciate it, but I think that it's important that, you know, we talk about the other thing too whenever we get around to it. But yeah, I guess, I don't know. Do you guys have any questions sort of like about the deck or about the day?
I feel there's a golden opportunity to make a... You do get a card, right? Is that still a North America thing?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, it is? Oh, I thought they put it down in just Worlds.
I was told by Nate that he thought I was getting one, for what it's worth.
Oh, that sounds ironclad.
Lock wow. That yeah, one. I know, right?
I'm so glad we don't know the status of that. But let's say you do, there's a golden opportunity for something like Chaos is a Ladder or Ooh. Rising from the Bullshit. I don't know what the name should be, but I feel like there's a great, here's this really nice thing that happened that we really do need to focus on compared to the shenanigans.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess it's not set in stone, but Nate thought that I did. I don't know who I need to talk to find out about that, but yeah, so... it was crazy. It's that. There's no real other way to describe it.
Can I just talk about my excitement that Pyromancers featured so prominently in the finals after, you know, like being this momentary splash when it came out in the chapter pack and everyone being like, "Whoa, wait a minute, this is going to be insane. It's going to break stuff." And then, you know, after that flash in the pan was done, everyone was like, "Yeah. That's way too expensive for what it does."
Right, yeah. It is expensive. It's definitely true, but it's just like the only way for the deck to answer other people's locations. And with the addition of Last of the Giants, it makes it slightly more flexible.
I would think the Lancer shenanigans help too, because it mitigates the power differential that you're generating by using the Pyromancers.
Yeah. Orphan is really strong. I think people undervalue that card in general. It's just a card advantage machine. I think I probably drained something like, I don't know, 50 to 70 power over the course of the entire tournament. It was a lot. Yeah. So, I mean... Then you add in chamber triggers as well, and it's just your opponent kind of has to score like 25 or 30 power to win the game against you. And when you're resetting the board constantly, you have all this inevitability. It's definitely a potent combination.
I felt like when I played against it, my treacheries and hands judgments did a lot of work. I was surprised. I tried to think about, do you pack Hand's Judgments in there? I haven't looked at the list yet.
So we don't
or
have
just assume you eat those on the chin.
Yeah, we don't have Hand's Judgment. You know, the events in the deck are not, they're not the crux, so to speak. Definitely getting like a Secret Schemes Hand's Judgmented is not ideal. But, you know, the thing is, like, you can't have great matchups everywhere, and the Lanny matchup's probably as close to a coin flip as any of the, like, tier one decks that exist, you know, are going to be. Like, most of the other matchups are much better. Yeah, absolutely. Like, Treachery is a very good card, but you have to play around it, right? Like, you have to try to find a way to get it out of your opponent's hand. And, you know, like, the hand's judgment for the Viper's Eyes is definitely strong, but we just... We put people on not having a lot of hand's judgments right now. And, yeah, it's... For, you know, whether or not that was the truth or not, it seemed to work out, so... It's definitely a situational deck. I don't think that it's going to necessarily be a major player in the meta going forward.
Well, and everything's getting shooken up with this next pack anyways.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is going to be one of the biggest shakeups we've seen in a while.
Absolutely. Yeah, the next pack is incredibly strong. So, but yeah, it worked for the tournament.
Next week, listeners.
That's all that matters.
Yeah. Indeed. So, but yeah, no, I apologize to all of my opponents who had to play against me. I'm sure it must have been miserable. But yeah.
Them's
not much more to say about it. Them's the breaks. So.
Okay, so we've got a new topic here. We made it through the tourney reports, hinted and kind of beat around the bush about this particular topic quite a bit. And I know that there are some listeners that are just dying to hear us talk about it. So here's where we probably wind up getting kind of negative, dear listeners. Many of you are already aware of the controversy. On Sunday morning at the North American Championships at Gen Con, but some of you may not. So we're probably going to kind of recap some of the morning, what we were doing, what was going on, you know, much like the JFK assassination. Where were you when it happened, so to speak? Wow, here I am making light of presidential assassination. 60
too soon,
ago.
Will. Too soon.
Too soon. Too soon. So anyway, we're gonna dive into that. We're gonna talk opinions. We're gonna talk about problems. We're gonna hash it out a little bit here. So, gosh, the question is, where to start? I think maybe I'm gonna go ahead and give listeners that may not know what went down. Just the bare bones skeleton here, and then we'll kind of build things up and fill in from there. Probably starting a little with Kyle and his morning. So, the bare bones nutshell here is that on Sunday morning to start the top 16 cut, FFG actually moved the registration and. Hard start times up by half an hour. They were listed in the Gen Con program schedule at 8:30 for registration, 9 o'clock hard start. FFG moved them to 8 o'clock reg, 8:30 start, which then resulted in one member of the top 16 who was going by the Gen Con schedule to show up, 5 to 10 minutes late. For the round and to have been disqualified, despite the fact that he thought he was showing up 20 to 25 minutes early. So that is the bare bones nutshell of what happened. So, Kyle, now you were out of the folks on the show most directly involved in this for multiple reasons. Not only were you the number one seed going into the elimination rounds, but you were also the 16 seed, also playing the 16 seed, who was Matt Lay, also frequently called Rings, who was the player that was disqualified. You guys were also rooming together at the con. So how did that morning go down for you? How did you get there, on time? How did you guys find out? Or did you find out beforehand and not tell Matt because you wanted the edge and needed him to lose? You know, what happened?
Yes, this is where it all comes clean. It was pure sabotage. I took down Matt Lay. Matt and I are dear friends for the last, I'm not going to like this number, 12 years, 11 years? Too many. I've known Matt since I knew how to drive. We stick around for, I will go through this with just facts and what I've been told / know, and try to leave my opinions out of it, and then we can discuss our thoughts and feelings on the situation. So the night before, we stick around, we see who makes top cut. Me and Matt both make it. We celebrate. We gather our stuff. We leave the hall. We are at dinner that night, and Matt goes to me and goes, "Hey, what time is registration tomorrow?" I say, "You know, I don't think they said anything." So I pull up on my phone the digital event catalog, and according to the... If you pulled up the Joust event, like the main event, Swiss, it says play players report for Top Cut at 9 a.m. Sunday. But there's a separate event, as if you could buy a ticket to it, for Top Cut, and it says players report at 8:30, game start at 9. So I tell Matt we need to be there at 8:30. He says, okay. We set alarms for like 7 a.m., 7:15, something like that. We then take it easy most of that night, which Will can attest to. Will came over and found he was very confused because there were two sober individuals who are never sober this hotel room with a bunch of drunks.
We showed up there, maybe 1 o'clock and stayed for about an hour because you guys were crashing. It was remarkably tame for a Saturday night at Gen Con.
So me and Matt – oh, go ahead, Alex.
Let me just interject real quick. I just wanted to be known that I think that the story you're telling is actually kind of against sort of the lore that I've heard leading up to this, which was that you both actually got trashed. So I'm glad to hear that that's not true and that you guys, you know, were taking it relatively easy, because I think that actually – you know, it adds to the validity of your, like...
I should verify, they were drinking.
Sure, but in modesty, at least. Yeah.
I was made fun of because I was the first one to go to bed. I snuck into we had a suite that four of us were staying in. I snuck into the bedroom and crashed while people were still there.
Sure. Yeah, before we had even left.
Go on, okay.
So, yes, so... we go to bed, we wake up, it's like 7:15, 7:30, something like that. And we're up, we're both up, and I go, and like, I've got new braces, so I stop and I eat, and me and Matt talk a little bit, and then I'm like, hey, I'm gonna hop in the shower. He's like, okay, yeah, you go first, I gotta make a phone call. So I get in the shower, and I get out, and I have a friend who's at the con, doesn't play Thrones, who is friends with one of the FFG judges. I don't know if he's a judge or if he just helps out. I saw him throughout the weekend, but I don't know what his official title or duties is. And I don't personally know him, just friend of a friend. So I get out of the shower, and I have a message from my friend, and he goes, hey, are you playing in Thrones today? And I was like, yeah, it starts at 9, thinking he might want to like show up for moral support or something like that. excuse me. And he says, well, you need to, or I forget what his friend's name is. Shoot. He's like, he says you need to get there. And I go, that's weird. So Matt has in this time hopped in the shower. And so I message him back. I'm like, what do you mean I need to get there? He's like, he says you need to get there. And I'm like, I got, I think 12 minutes till it's like 8:20 at this point, maybe 8:15, somewhere in there. I'm like, I got 10 minutes to get down there to reg. And then there's still another 30-minute buffer till we play. So I don't know why I need to rush down there. But I like knock on the door and I yell into Matt. I'm like, hey, I'm going to head down there and see what's up and I'll call you when I find out what's going on. And he's like, why do they want us down there? Like, we're both super confused. So I get on my bag and I head downstairs. We're staying at the Omni, which to put in relation is at the other end of the food truck aisle that we all live off of for 4 days. So I get down to the ground level and I come out and my friend calls me. And I answer and I'm like, yeah, Miles, what's up? And he's like, He's like, says, you need to run or you are not going to play today. And I say, what do you mean? And he's like, he is telling me if you do not run, you are going to miss this tournament. So at that point, I then jog that block into the con and then jog through the con to the hall. So now I'm huffing and puffing.
You didn't get caught by one of the con folks. They made a big deal about if you were running, they were pulling badges.
There were not a lot of people in there. I mean, it was pretty dead. It's 8:30 in the morning on Sunday.
Sure.
But so I get to the hall and I get down there and they're like, all right, let's play. And so they start naming off pairings and they go through the list and I notice they don't say Matt's name. There's a dude who I didn't now know is Fred, who has gotten dragged into this, sitting there, and I'm like, who is this guy? And I literally went up to Nate and I go, why isn't Matt playing? Thinking, you know, maybe he, I don't even know. Cause Matt would be the weird one to drop and I don't know. And he's like, Matt has been disqualified. We were not able to get a hold of him, is the quote I got, which I know is crap because I was with Matt for the, what would have been the get a hold of him period. And we then talked later and no one ever reached out to him. He has no emails. When they have all of our email addresses on our deck list, he has no phone call, no text, no nothing. So then I sit down and they say, all right, time to play. Let's start. And there's some dude in the bathroom that they like, he had like just sat down. I was like, can I get 2 minutes to shuffle? And they're like, okay, I guess. So at 8:35, round started. So I'm now super disoriented and I'm switching gears because I've been, you know, essentially in my mind playing against Matt all night and morning. And now I'm playing Builders, which is a very different game. Matt was playing Lainey Greyjoy or Greyjoy Lion. I forget which way he went.
Lainey Joy.
Yeah, Lainey Mainhouse.
And I remember shuffling and we like flopped cards and Matt walks in and he's like talking to Nate. Like 2 feet to my left. And I just remember I kept looking over and listening in and Fred's like reactions and asking about windows. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like Matt goes up to the flight control or whatever for like all of 30 seconds and gets turned away and then goes and talks with Nate hushed away from it. So I'm upset and confused and hurt. And that game goes horribly. I get up. I mean, Fred played great. I do not want to discount Fred's win in any way. He made no play mistakes. He was phenomenal. I just did not live up to my end of that bargain. So I get up. I mean, it's like 3 rounds. And I scoop and I walk away and I go to rings. And he's like, yeah, the guy at the counter. He's like, I walked up to the counter. Because he came over. Oh, yeah, that's right. Like round one, like mid-playing, he comes over. He's like, Kyle, where does it say the 8:39 o'clock thing. Can you tell me? And I say, yeah, it's in the app. If you pull up the app or go get the book, it'll say. He goes, okay. So then he leaves again. Then he goes up to the counter, shows the guy. He like shrugs and walks away. Then him and Nate talk. So I guess what happened is he approached the flight control, said, hey, your book says 8:39 o'clock, not 8:30. And he goes, it was a miscommunication, and then walks away. And that is all the official word Rings gets from FFG. He then goes talks to Nate because him and Nate are friends because he's been playing this game for 2 decades. And I think, and you know, they talk and discuss, and I won't get into that because I was not at that conversation. But that is what we got. So then I get up and I go, what happened? He goes, they're telling me it's a miscommunication, that they announced it, and that was that. Now, what I have been told, and Alex, I would love to get your opinion on this because you were there, is that half the people were unaware of this 8 o'clock announcement and just showed up early anyways. So it's like, I know I'm supposed to be there at 8:30, but I'll show up at 8:10, 8:15 just to be responsible and lucked into it. But the only reason it was us is because we pushed it to the limit.
So what happened to me? So what happened to me was I left and went home under the assumption that the round would be starting at 9 and we needed to get there at 8:30. I was fortunate enough to know or to be around enough other people in the cut that someone had heard that it was going to be that it was moved up or that it was at a different time. And I don't remember who it was, but someone told me, no, they said it starts at 8:30 and you need to be there at 8. And that's how I found out. I didn't hear the announcement personally. And I heard it through, you know, secondhand. And, you know, so I can say that at least someone was told and it wasn't all dumb luck. But I mean, had I not been with other people who knew that it had been changed, I could have been in the exact same boat as you guys. You know, it's just, it's terrible. Like, why? I don't even know. Are they even allowed to move the times of events?
No, they're not. I have a friend who runs a panel for Gen Con. She's like, they make a huge deal about if you say you're going to hold something somewhere at a certain time, you have to do it. Like, obviously, she's one person, so when they threaten that you'll never run a panel again, like, you're not going to boot FFG out of Gen Con. But yeah, they emphasize the accuracy of their book/app a lot.
I can vouch for that as well with some other friends that were running events for other companies. I don't want to throw any of them under the bus inadvertently or anything, but I can definitely say that they had listed a particular event with Gen Con, multiples of this event, but they managed to get something else done in time before Gen Con that they didn't expect to have finished. And so they came to Gen Con and said, hey, you know, we got this thing done. We're super excited about it. Could we do a couple of these instead? And they were told by Gen Con, no. Like, essentially, the conversation was, you said you would do X, you will do X. You will not do Y, you will not do A, you will do X. So, yeah, I know they can be sticklers.
And the sad thing is, part of me thinks, like, everyone goes, why would they change it? I don't even think they know what they said they put in the book. I don't think it was a change. I think they just said, hey, what time are we going to play tomorrow? I don't fucking know. Let's throw it at 8. I don't think they had any clue that somewhere they had an announced time.
Yeah. I'll say I chit-chatted later in the day once I had personally cooled off and heard that, yes, maybe there was a mix-up between their internal documents and the Gen Con documents. I planned for this to be just a joust talk of an episode, but there was a similar kerfluffle in Melee regarding what their documents said they were doing versus what the Gen Con documents said they were doing. So I don't know. It makes me question, did their dog get changed? Did someone make a choice to push up the tournament? At what point did they? Or is there just not anybody there, like, double checking it, you know, looking for that integrity to make sure everything matches?
No, I can guarantee you that. That dude does not exist, and it's not on payroll.
Yeah, it seems like this could have been solved with the click of a couple buttons and, you know, like, how hard is it to cover your ass if you're FFG? Like, if you're going to make a change like this or what have you, you know, send an email out to all the people, members of the top 16, you know, make an effort to communicate with everyone the time. Like, they were so preoccupied with other events they had going on over the course of this weekend. Like, you know, I will say having only gone to one previous Gen Con, you know, they did have a lot on their plate when it came to the L5R and Destiny tournaments that they were running. But it's not that difficult to send an email out. And then at least you can point to that and say, you know, we sent you an email. You know, they have no proof. Like, I would like to hear from somebody who can say, I was there, I heard the announcement. You know, like, if you were across the hall or in the bathroom, there's no way you're hearing any sort of announcement that they make. Even if I'm in that room sitting in the FFG area, there are constant announcements going on, and I'm not listening to all of them.
No, yeah, because it's all of their running, game.
Yeah, yeah, they're running all those events. There's announcements for, you know, four different events going on. Round starts, round ends, make sure you turn in your pairings, you know, five-minute warnings, this, that, and the other. People tune it out, and even when I was specifically listening, you know, like, at start of the tournament, I'm at table two, not, you know, not the very closest of the thrones tables to the speakers, but also, you know, not the furthest. I'd say within the closest third. I had to turn to my opponents after they said round start and say, did they say go? Like, I couldn't even understand what that sentence was.
I mean, let's roll back for a moment. Let's assume there is no conflicting information out there, that the Gen Con event, like, there's no times listed anywhere. Why is your one thought, so let's assume they believe that, that it's not a conscious change for no good reason, that it's just a, we picked a time to start, not realizing there was conflicting info. So why is your only way of communicating to 16 people whose emails you have and theoretically are in that room in the moment, just to pipe it over your speakers real quick, not write it down, not call it together for a huddle, not do anything, just, hey, by the way, Thrones is at 8 tomorrow, deuces. Like, why is that a satisfactory level of communication? So let's say we don't hear that, and that night, now we're scrambling on Facebook, texting people, trying to find someone who lucked into hearing that. Now, let's say two people heard different things. I heard 8. I heard 9. Now what do I do? You know what I mean? Like, it's so piss poor, regardless of the, like, surrounding circumstance. They can just distill it down to thinking piping it over is a satisfactory act. I don't understand why someone thought that was okay who's getting paid to do it.
Yeah, that's a hobby horse that I would personally love to ride here for a moment, because, you know, many listeners and friends and stuff know that at our regional last year, there was a bit of a kerfluffle of our own at the cut with some players that turned out to have illegal decks when we stopped to do deck checks, which, you know, I'll just throw out there again that we did deck checks at the point of the cut, which was a procedure fairly well established by the way FFG ran their premier events for the last few years before that. And that turned out to be a problem because at the point those players were disqualified, the next, let's see, I think I was the number 9 player and I was there, but then the next couple, 3 players had already left. We didn't have phone numbers. We thought the odds of them checking email, you know, fast enough to notice and get back were low. We were trying to find out who could Facebook message who. We wound up Facebook calling someone and about giving them a heart attack because they'd never had a phone call come through Facebook before on their phone. Just, we scrambled.
Yeah, and by the way, right, you know, I can finish. Okay. Well, I'm sorry.
Oh, well, I was going to say, point being, this year for first player, we asked for phone numbers. We learned from that mistake, and we improved. So then it boggles my mind that we didn't get a regional this year, which – in my mind, I can still mostly only chalk up to player complaints about the kerfluffle we had the prior year. And when I saw the deck lists at Gen Con this year, I see they have all of these new checkboxes on them that weren't there before about verifying your banner count and so on. There's what, 4 or 5 of them down in the bottom?
Yes.
That look specifically like they are in reference to what happened at our regional. In fact, one of those players even posted a picture of it on Facebook saying, "Hey, look what I got added to the deck list." Right. So it's not like FFG didn't look at what happened to us and learn some lessons, but they didn't learn arguably the most important to actually, like, playing out the rest of the tournament, which is making sure you have contact information for people that you can actually utilize.
And what is so precious about those minutes. Like, if I had not been at an attached hotel, like, if I'd been 7 blocks away and had to walk in, like, why is you going to go, well, it's 8:30. I can either give my 16 and 1 seed 5 more minutes, or I can just say, F it, and lose 20%, like, an eighth of my field. I don't understand why that is the route we went.
Yeah.
Like, that's the other side of this that just seems maddening.
Yeah, I mean, and to that end, Will, they didn't do deck checks for this event either, which I thought was kind of mind-boggling. Like,
they didn't even collect decks for the major.
No, I was told that they would be done sporadically, and it was not done at all. Which kind of bothered me as well. But yeah,
especially when you've had an overnight session.
Those boxes.
Well, I mean, and you have an overnight session. Like, how do you not check in the morning?
Right.
When you've given your players 12 hours to think about and tweak and scheme and have feedback and look at who they're playing and all that stuff. Like, mind-blowing.
I could at least see it if they were like, hey, we need the extra time. Like, we realize we're going to need more than half an hour to check decks. You know, we need everyone to be here at 8, but we're still going to start at 9. Like, that I could grasp.
So, but this wasn't that. I'm going to try to inject some semblance of logic on the part of FFG for the why they made these decisions. It does seem like they were up against the clock as far as when they needed to get all of their events done by. And so I think that's probably why – I don't think it was completely I think there was a reason why they moved it up 30 minutes. And I think that they saw that 2 o'clock time at the end of the day where they were going to be kicking people out of the hall. That being said, it does not excuse any of the actions that they took.
But to go into that foresight and planning, though, you know that time, and you know how long a round takes when you initially were setting / advertising that, then why is the 8:39 o'clock so rough? Like, why do you pick that knowing you have to shove 5 hours worth of shit into 3 hours?
Right.
You know what I mean?
No, I completely agree. And I don't want to oversimplify it, but it does seem like they were just not prepared for the size of events from other games that were going on. I know that L5R had like 600 or 700 people or something, and the Destiny tournament, was like 350, and they were running all of those tournaments, including the Thrones tournament, on the same day. And I don't know if I ever saw more than like 5 or 6 people in the FFG, flight control or whatever. It just they were woefully understaffed. They weren't prepared for the event, for the events. It really isn't acceptable on any level. I think that FFG needs to, they need to spend a little money to make a little money, I guess. I don't know if this OP stuff actually makes them money or not, but, they have a lot of good IP and a lot of solid fan bases, and they're just needlessly throwing away some of them by events like this taking place. At the highest stage.
You mentioning spending money to make money just makes me wonder. I saw someone had posted on Facebook. I don't know if they're right about the corporate structure there at FFG Asmodee North America, but they suggested that maybe organized play is actually part of the sales division rather than the marketing division, which, if true, I think probably gives them a wildly different viewpoint and goal than what players are expecting. I think players expect it from a marketing viewpoint. Am I incorrect, at least for you guys? Or
100%.
It's probably the same.
They should be there to emphasize and magnify the experience you're having. We shouldn't make fun of price support, and we shouldn't be confused for why someone thinks, like, who looked at like last year and said cardboard Iron Thrones for first player tokens, that's what the 4 best players in North America need. Like, who? I don't understand. And I think that disconnect shows up when you, once you said that, Will, I was like, it makes so much sense, because the prices for the most part tend to be as cheap as possible. They get way stingier than what they announce on the numbers they bring for stuff like that. It's, I mean, how long have they had those egg trophies? Like, and it's, they're not the indie company they used to be when they were over in the Hyatt. I was talking with someone, and they're like, okay, so let's say you say, screw you, FFG, I'm going to go play another card game. You have what, Magic and nothing now. They own it all. You're the second biggest fish in the pond.
I guess there's Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah, it's pretty much Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, Magic, but I mean, it's not even
Doomtown,
about that.
Doomtown's being relaunched. Keep going, Alex.
And, you know, I actually had this conversation with my teammates recently, where, you know, it's an uncomfortable feeling waking up every day wondering if, you know, if your game is going to die because the company is just, like, not handling things correctly. There's, you know, as far as the community is concerned, there's so much love and passion for the game, but it just doesn't seem to be translating through FFG. And I just don't, you know, I feel a little bit despondent about that.
For years, this thing has survived in spite of the company that makes it.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me, you know, as someone who played in the CCG era all the way till now. I mean, tracking things from 2002 till here, in a lot of ways, while the player base has grown and attendance at events has grown versus a lot of those early years, I think there's kind of been an opposite trajectory of like organized play kind of capabilities, accoutrements, extras like you know, player ranking systems and event finders, you know, prize support, capability to organize and run error-free tournaments and so on, I think has been going downhill. At the same time, the company has gone uphill. You know, I look back at the level of communication that FFG gave us when they were that small company. You know, when we got at first weekly, then monthly designer journals and insight, you know, behind the scenes on what they were doing on their cards and stuff. Then I look at the big long kind of letter from FFG to the community when they totally redid the card design in the CCG era, like the templating, the graphic design, or I look at the Spaniard Christian Peterson's himself's letter to the community when the time came to switch from a CCG to an LCG, you know, and just so many other things in between. I just, now that they're not that indie company, like the stuff that they did that built those fan bases and built that broad support, not just Thrones, but across the spectrum in the gaming industry, the type of behavior that built them into the giant that they are now, because, you know, depends on what metrics you use probably, but by most of the ones I use, they're the biggest, Asmodee anyway, is the biggest fish in the pond by a healthy margin now. Like, now they would never do that sort of stuff, now that they're there, and that drives me up the wall as somebody who has lived all the way through that. Just drives me up the wall.
I felt, for the little bit I was there, I mean, I'll be honest, I got in, had my teeth kicked in, and was out of the hall fast. There is nothing else going on besides Thrones Draft, so I understand like why the announcement was flubbed, but why any of the decisions that morning were made. Like, you're in a low-pressure situation. We're the only thing of gravity going on.
So there were like no other like top cuts or anything playing that day?
I didn't think so. I think it was us and Thrones of Draft, and that was it, as far as I could tell.
At some point, they did do the Destiny cut. I don't know when it started. And I thought there was a L5R cut as well at some point, but I could be wrong about that. But we definitely seemed like to be the first thing going on that morning. I want to believe that what occurred happened due to negligence and not some sort of malevolence. But maybe that's just me being optimistic.
But at some point, there's no difference, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if you just ignore a game.
Better. I don't think it is.
That's a fair point.
And I got the vibe, to be honest, from not Nate, whoever was running the show, like, it was almost like we were a chore. Like I said, I came back, I sat down, they're like, all right, let's go. And they're like, well, we have someone in the bathroom, let's wait. Okay. And then he sat down, and it was like his butt hit the seat. And he was like, all right, round starts. And I remember he asked, like, can I just get 2 minutes to shuffle? And it was like this, like, gargantuan request. Like, and he was like, okay, I guess we'll start in 2 more minutes. Like, I don't know. It just, we shouldn't feel like sheep that are just getting, like, herded along by, I don't know. It, the whole thing just felt rotten.
Yeah.
And I realize I look through that now with colored glasses. But even then, I remember feeling like this is not the experience that this should be.
Yeah, it did seem like we were, you know, they were definitely in a rush, and the whole, like, overall the whole weekend experience, even in just compared to last year where it was the first Gen Con for Thrones 2.0 in full, it did kind of seem like we were the, you know, ugly stepchild game, and, you know, these new shiny toys in L5R and Destiny were taking up a lot more of their attention. And I mean, to some extent they should have. They were larger tournaments, but, you know, it still doesn't leave a good taste in your mouth.
Well, there's still like a standard of accuracy, right? Like, I can understand the huge opening ceremonies for L5R and that sort of thing. It is the new hotness, right? Like, I don't begrudge them for playing that up. Do I wish there'd been more when AGOT was the new hotness? Sure, but that's a different topic. But there's still, like, an accuracy.
Maybe, I don't know.
Well, I know.
I'm glad we're not doing Oots Banzai chants. That's all I know.
Oh, that's fair. Though I kind of wanted to try and get everyone together to chant Winter is Coming at the top of their lungs every time the L5R players started going, but that's an entirely different matter. But, you know, I don't really begrudge them the hoopla over the new and shiny, but I do begrudge them a certain basic level of accuracy and competency that we didn't have.
Yeah, I mean, and you see it, I think we touched on a point earlier, like, especially Will did, about things heading in different directions. I think it speaks a lot about people's trust and enthusiasm for player-ran things versus FFG-ran things. I mean, we used to love Card Game DB. I was like, this site is wonderful. And then that slowly, like, the moment it was FFG's baby, it's like everyone hunted desperately for a new place to go. Like, oh, we got Thrones DB. Oh, well, we got this. Well, we got that. And then you see it with, like, software. Sure.
But they definitely didn't do anything with it.
I think it stopped happening.
Yeah. I think what you're headed toward there, is, like, with Card Game DB, is emblematic of a very similar issue on the OP side, that this thing was done, in Card Game DB's place, buying this site. But there wasn't, like, this overall well-communicated and then implemented game plan. It was just, we did a thing. See?
Oh, it's awful. And you see it with, like everyone talks about Jousting Pavilion versus Tome. I didn't hear Alex go look up on Tome how Gen Con went, because you can't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so I'm
curious.
What's up?
Has anyone tested just – possibly in Tome's defense here, has anyone tested the Jousting Pavilion with a 700-player tournament? Or would the Jousting Pavilion also crash?
I don't think it would. I don't think that it's really that much more data when it comes down to it. But you know, that's just speculation on my part. But I do want to say sort of an observation that I've made over the course of my Thrones career, which is relatively short, like a year and a half, is that it does seem like Gen Con has been a problematic experience for them the last 2 years. I know that Gen Con 2016 did not go smashingly. They lost strength of schedule data between the day one and the graduated cut. And then obviously with all of the shenanigans that happened this year, you know, it just seems like they have a lot on their plate for Gen Con. Now, Worlds last year, it went really smoothly, I felt. And maybe I'm forgetting something. But basically what I'm getting at is it might just be that Gen Con's not the ideal experience for, you know, as far as like the pinnacle of OP for FFG. And maybe it's a good thing that things like Nationals are pretty much completely, you know, out of the hands of FFG at this point. It seems like they're sort of letting other people, you know, Patrick Day in this case with this last year's Nationals run that event. And, you know, they can sort of outsource those events, and maybe they'll even look to do that with North American Championships in the future, because I'd be fine with that if the events were going to be run better going forward.
I agree. So.
I think you see that even down. So first player tournament essentially ran as, I mean, not originally, but its ultimate form was running counter programming to an FFG regional in Tulsa, and it outperformed a place.
Just point that out. That was not our intention.
No. But Midwestern / Southern players had a choice. I can either drive a little east to Springfield or a little west to Tulsa. I mean, really, the cities are quite close for most people traveling. And more chose Springfield than Tulsa. And why is that? Because you hear player run event and you think, sweet prize support that's actually going to be useful and innovative. You think we're going to come up to rational decisions on controversial moments, like is someone running late for the cut? You're going to have a more stronger sense of community and communication with what's going on at all times.
Yeah,
you know it's going to be better.
There's a general lack of empathy going on FFG's part in these last couple Gen Cons, it seems like. And yeah, it's even after my positive experience, it's making me wonder whether or not Gen Con is just like, it's too much for FFG, and it's just maybe not something that I'll go to in the future, and I'll just stick to, you know, Nationals and Worlds, because my past experience with those events has been much more positive, even though I won the thing, you know? So, like, I think that says a lot, that, like, I, you know, even though I'm really happy to have won the tournament, you know, my ultimate takeaway was that they messed up big time, and it's just really not forgivable.
I mean, we're sitting here days later, and I haven't heard a peep. I mean, Andreas has that thing about compiling quotes and stuff that he says someone he knows in the company has reached out for. But the fact that we've had no comments or some, like, I understand that's their policy, but how do you not break that for a moment to say, hey, like, let's turn the, like, to get ahead of the storm? The fact that we still are getting no news from them, I find on some level, is a little mind-boggling.
You know, it's
that little, like, OP person has said, hey, I want to come on the white book. I want to get out there and say something. The fact that no reach outs have happened and there's no proactive action happening. Now, granted, it's Wednesday, so I get it. Like, Gen Con just happened, but if we're sitting here next Wednesday with no word, it's, I don't know, it's too much.
Yeah, and it's something that bugs me when we have the OP head on the show. Let's see, it was about this time last year, maybe a couple weeks later, it was post-Gen Con, I'm pretty certain, you know, promising this better communication and tools and whatnot, or at least that they were desperately trying to figure out how in the world they could possibly do so, which... that's a whole fun topic to expand on there, which we may not delve into, but we're still waiting. We're still waiting on that communication.
And people panned that episode then. Like, this seems like him just being into not, like, I will not speak for him or what was in his head, but it just felt like everything rang super hollow. And here we are a year later with hollow things from those. You know what I'm saying? Like, the proof is in the actions. Like, I should not – the most impressive thing about your tournament shouldn't be that you finally got rid of those terrible trophies. Like, that should not be the highlight.
The new,
from Fred G.
Credit where credit's due, the trophies this year I thought looked really cool.
Yeah, the new trophies are sweet. Yeah, I mean, it's like FFG. People love your games. You got to figure it out, you know? Like, it's really – that's what it boils down to.
Okay, so I mean, there's a ton of different rabbit holes and things we could just keep going on and on about here, I think, and just digging holes deeper here and there. But I think for the moment, our coverage of these issues is going to pause. We'll talk about some other issues, I'm sure, in the Melee episode recap. But for the moment, let's go ahead. Let's wrap this with our parting thoughts. Just a minute or two each here, guys, or something. And then we're going to move on to something positive with some props and hopefully no slops. This is already sloppy enough. So I'll lead the final thoughts off. And I just want to say, you know, I'm disappointed. You know, I'm just exhausted at this point. I think that's what it really boils down to. I woke up Sunday morning about 9 o'clock thinking I could leisurely stroll down, see how the top 16 was doing, and then suddenly saw all these messages from people begging to know where Kyle and Rings were, and it enraged me. I've played this game for 15 years, and it is single-handedly the most angry I have ever been in regards to the game. Now I think the anger has burned out of me in a lot of ways, and I'm just exhausted. It's just one more straw on the camel's back, and I don't know. I'd be lying if I said I didn't contemplate right then and there that maybe the show was done, that maybe I was just done with Thrones and it was time to move on to something else. I love the community too much, though. I don't know that I'm gonna do something like that. But I sure don't have any desire, really, to go to Worlds to compete at the highest levels of FFG's organized play. Do I have some desire to go and see my friends and eat food and get plastered at what you call Joe Sensor's? Sure. It's always fun. But this sort of stuff has just made FFG tournaments not fun. There you go. Somebody else's turn.
I have realized that what we are, Will, is we are all Craster's wives. We are all friends. We are all in this together, and yet we keep getting our children taken away and fed to others. That is our lot in life. I mean, it is. Everyone's like, oh man, this is miserable and pisses me off, but I like you guys, so I'm going to stick around. This pact that we're all just going to be sad together. And that's awful. Like, if FFG would just get out of their own way and just manage the game, everyone else will take care of the rest for you. That's how much we like it and like each other. It would be, I've never seen a community that I think would be easier to please if you would just stop effing it up so hard.
Well said. Yeah, I don't think I have anything else to say. I think I've said my piece at this point, you know?
I will say that Sunday was the first time on the ride home I've ever thought about, and Alex kind of touched on this earlier, what does life look like when Thrones dies? And it was not... I joked about it Wednesday and Thursday. I'm like, we'll all get together. There'll be player-run events. Like, it'll be fine. We'll still drink and hang out. I'll see everyone. I like to travel. Not a big deal. And it was kind of like a ha-ha-ha, whatever. And then Sunday was like, okay, how long can we keep this alive if it really dies? How active a community can you keep with no company support? How connected can we really be? I mean, it was all the, like, really sad, dark realities as opposed to the fluffy, optimistic ones that had been there 3 days prior.
Right.
And that is a new shift in the 11, 12 years I've been playing. Never thought about it till Sunday.
Well, there you go, listeners. And hopefully we've got a few folks at FFG listening again this week. My extra super special closing there, in case you are listening, is we don't want you to fail. We keep saying these things and we take them so hard because we want you to succeed, because we do love this. So please, just please. On that thoroughly depressing note,
I'm going to go jump in a bathtub with a toaster. You'll have to excuse me for a minute.
Yeah. But you know
God, that was depressing and somber.
That was like, God. That was like the red wedding end of the Game of Thrones season 3.
Yeah, you know, maybe this week I'm just going to insert the Reigns of Castamere right there.
I was about to say that. I was like, silence into Reigns of Castamere.
I think you totally should. I think you should do that.
Okay, sounds good. So, okay,
let it be the death knell that it is.
No slops in our final segment this week. Just props. We're going to lay a couple good things about Gen Con on folks. I'm going to start it off, and mine is still going to be focused on the community. I met a bunch of new people this year, or at least new to me, folks I've talked with online or had other folks tell me about, but I've never had the chance to meet and hang out with in person. In some ways, I feel bad that I didn't hardly hang out with the old guard and folks I've been friends with for years now, like Kyle and Rings and Tommy, and heck, Daryl was there even though he didn't play Thrones and stuff like that. But in other ways, I think it was really good to meet and I think get to actually spend some time building, you know, new bonds of a similar nature with folks like Jesse and Scott and Zach. And you know what? I'm sure I'm going to forget people. So my apologies to everyone else I met and don't remember names off the top of my head. So that's my first prop takeaway from Gen Con.
I finally went to that Mikado sushi place right across from the food trucks. Every year I look at it, and every year I go, you know what, Kyle, you're not worth it. And this year, I just got in braces, and I was like, sushi sounds so nice. And it was. It was really nice.
Nice.
Yeah, props to my team. You guys did awesome, and I, you know, as much turmoil as there was with FFGOP, I definitely look forward to working with everybody again. And yeah, just it feels good to be a part of a team. So thanks for being there, dudes. And Jessica, who's not a dude.
Jessica. The dude.
I don't know.
One.
Depends on where you're from. I definitely know a lot of places in the world where dude is a gender.
Yeah.
Sometimes a human as well. Well, I'm gonna keep it going with the food thing, like Kyle said. I'm actually gonna kind of combine it though with some props to co-host Luke, who took us to a place called the Eagle, our first night in town, with some real tasty Southern food, fried chicken and succotash and spoon bread and stuff. It was phenomenal.
That sounds amazing.
It was so good after a long drive, sitting out on their kind of deck area. And then also to the surprisingly small and intimate post-joust dinner, or sorry, it was the post-melee dinner that we had, which turned out to just be me, Kristen, Roy, and Sandy. I've never had such a sedate night like that. We went over to Harry and Izzy's, which I've always wanted to eat at St. Elmo's and never have, but went to Harry and Izzy's for the first time, and they informed me that it's literally the same cooks and owners and stuff, just a slightly different menu and a slightly different feel inside. And it was good. It was definitely good.
Yeah, I had a big old steak Sunday night to celebrate at Harry and Izzy's, and it was delicious.
Yeah, good choice.
I will forget his name, but one of my melee games, a guy had gone to the Meeple booth and had bought these adorable little wooden Totoros, and he had 15 little Totoros. And part of me liked that he was gaining power because more little Totoros came out. And I was like, man, that is good melee strategy.
Good. It's,
props to that guy for using lovable tokens, because that obviously works on weak-minded people.
That's a good teaser and segue into next week, it sounds like.
That is. Speaking of fuzzy things, I want to throw quick props out to what was the booth that had exploding kittens? Did you guys see the giant fuzzy cat box?
The vending machine with people inside?
Yeah, yes. It was exploding kittens, I think.
Yeah. Oh, that thing was amazing and hilarious. The $1 random items. Kristen and I spent an inordinate amount of time debating about how often they had to send people off to like Walmart or something to buy more watermelons and BVDs and stuff to hand out.
Yeah, I only played two board games on the weekend. One of them was King Domino, and that game is really fun. So props to that game.
Kyle, you got anything else?
Kilroy's had peanut butter and jelly breadsticks, and I didn't know I needed those in my life until Thursday night.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
But I did. Not to work two food props into one, but I am the fat kid, so.
I mean, I've done that. Worked two food props into one.
Yeah. Besides that, also props to the Omni. I've never stayed at the Omni before. I think it may be my new number one hotel, just with where the restaurants are and the shift Gen Con has had way back in the day. For our listeners, the other end of the hall is where like the dealers and the card games were, and slowly Gen Con has like migrated as it like built more building. So what used to be sweet down by the JW is now far from the action, and all the cool kids hanging out at the Omni. So prop for next year, you know, for like the lucky 12 people who get to pick a room downtown, Omniland is where it's at.
And I think my final prop is going to be to Dogmite Games. I know Kyle will back me on this. Oh. When I say games, I just see it as Dogmite now because they do all of the
they have two coming out.
Accessories.
They have two coming out.
Good. So I got to bump into Mike again there and see some of the sweet new products they've been working on, some new like Maglock deck boxes with dials on the front that seemed really cool. This customizable like token storage tray system that interlocks in with additional pieces that's all done with magnets. They have dice this year now. Like I'm sure I'm going to come back and I'm going to do like a more full review of that kind of stuff at some point here soon. But I wanted to just throw an immediate Gen Con prop their way because I love chatting with Mike, and I love seeing their ingenuity, and they're obviously doing very well for themselves in the market. So if you're looking for cool gaming accessories, I highly recommend them.
And they started as Thrones players and fans of this show. They were like, hey, you don't know us, but we're two guys in Michigan who like wooden products. Would you be so kind as to review our deck box? I mean, that's the roots. So those are old community players out there chasing their dream.
Like Mike said, and it was a little mind-boggling when he kind of reminded me of that. Like, we were their first industry contact, as he put it, which I'm trying really hard not to let that go to my head, it kind of is anyway. And I got to meet one of their other new employees, I think Lindsay is her name, if I remember right.
Who's yes.
Also a game designer and stuff. But she's also getting into Thrones. They evidently do still play Thrones. They're getting her in, and she's been listening to the show, and it's been really helping her kind of get into things. So she was really pumped talking about that. So I don't know. It's always good meeting folks. And I definitely met other folks throughout the weekend that listened to the show. Breton is the only one that sticks out in the top of my head right now that I can remember the name. So I apologize to the other folks, because I know there was probably half a dozen other folks that came up and just basically said, hey, thanks for the show, I love listening. And then they kind of wandered away before I could really talk to them. So I apologize so much that I can't name all the fans personally that did come up and say something. But regardless, know that it meant the world to me that you came up and said you appreciated the show.
And Mike and Lindsay suffer from an issue that I think a lot of us Thronesers have, and that's where playing with your significant other leads to raised voices and physical violence. So maybe we should do an episode on like therapy on how to play with your loved ones and not cause tears.
That could be a really fun episode sometime. I like it.
We'll bring on some of Alex's meta mates. They're married and both competitively play, so got this.
Perfect. We can talk all about the danger zone.
Smooth. Ooh, smooth.
I think this entire episode was in the danger zone.
FFG is in the danger zone.
They are. And that definitely closes this chapter.